In this episode of Startups with the Rest of Us, Mike and I talk about how to identify and deal with toxic customers. This is Startups with the Rest of Us, episode 341. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products, whether you built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
We're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Mike?
Well, a couple of things. I just pushed a major UI release for Bluetick to address some usability questions and stuff that kept coming up for people. And it's a massive improvement, but it took forever to get it done. It was like a week and a half to get everything finalized and tested and pushed out the door. But it's over and done with, so I can kind of move on from that side of things at this point.
Congratulations. Now, that's a big deal. So it's over and done with for 3 to 6 months until more usability stuff comes up.
For like, yeah, it's done for like 3 days is
yeah.
what that is.
Yeah, good for you, though.
Really boils down to.
That's a big deal. Congratulations. I know that it's this kind of stuff. It nags at you because you know it has to get done, but it doesn't exactly move things forward. It's better than like doing taxes in terms of moving things forward for customers, but it's also not a new feature, right? So it's that balance of like, oh, I gotta push this.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the part that made this piece so difficult was the fact that this was one of the areas that I knew needed to be rewritten, you know, for the past 6 months, to be perfectly honest. And I just didn't get into it because I knew that it was going to be a hornet's nest and didn't want to deal with it at the time. But that said, it's like I went through it, got most of the things cleared away, got all the code organized and commented properly, and everything's much more tested now than it ever was before. And it's just so much easier to work with. Like I can go in and make changes now, whereas before I was afraid to touch anything because it might fall over and break.
Yeah, that's good. It's nice to refactor as well. And it sounds like it was a UI improvement as well as a code refactor. So that's two wins.
Yep. Now that that's out of the way, and now I can move on to more important things like the website and you know, getting the sign up process working.
Right. Cool. For me, the only thing I have this week is we got a nice email from Victor Perolnik, and he had listened to our previous episode where someone asked a question about resources for the engineering side of launching a SaaS. And we had given a couple, but it was mostly like blog posts and such. And we did specifically say, I know there's going to be some out there for specific languages. Like if you want to do it in Rails, you're going to find stuff. If you want to do it in PHP. And Victor called out Spark, which is from Laravel, which is a PHP framework for building a SaaS app. And it's spark.laravel.com. He also talked about like Laracast has a bunch of Spark screencasts if you wanted to see something really quick. And then linked to a couple blog posts that talk about it. And it gives you a head start if you're going to build a SaaS app in PHP. So anyways, wanted to call it out. We'll link those up in the show notes. If you happen to be building in PHP, that's probably where I would start.
Yeah, I looked through some of those links that he had sent over, and like Rob said, we'll link them up in the show notes. But the Spark system looked really nice for getting a SaaS app up and running and not having to deal with a lot of the fundamental plumbing that you would typically have to work with, like you know, the billing accounts and subscriptions and impersonation and things like that. It looked like it was all kind of cookie cutter, which is really nice.
So this week, we're going to be talking about how to identify and deal with toxic customers. And I wrote a blog post back in 2010, looks like December 2010, that we'll link up. And it was called How to Detect a Toxic Customer. And it actually got a lot of traction on I think it was Hacker News at the time. It has like 72 comments or something on it. But I basically walked through like a case study of what I had experienced with .NET Invoice and a customer who is quite demanding and just was really combative, and talked about how to identify them and what to do. And I find that this type of thing, you know, it comes up every 6 to 12 months. If you're running a SaaS app, if you're selling software, it can be a challenge. And you talk to anyone who's been selling software for any length of time, and they've run into something like this. So we've talked a little bit about this in the past on the podcast, but I just kind of want to walk through these steps of like, you know, how to identify really early on. Because one of the keys is being able to see it ahead of the actual person like getting in and starting to use your app. Because once they're using it, it actually becomes harder to kind of force them to switch. It's a really tough decision to do that. Maybe not at the same level of firing an employee that you mishired, but it is in that spectrum of like, man, if someone gets in and they're really using it and they're being a pain in the butt, it's hard to make them switch. So that's where we want to start with kind of early signs. If you're in conversations with someone that they may not be a good fit for you, even before they ever get into your app. So I have a big list here, mostly culled from this blog post. And, you know, one of the first signs is that they kind of view their vendors, in quotes, or they view you as like, it's this weird like attitude that you're like somehow a servant or a slave to them. They're extremely demanding. They treat everyone they speak with as if they're an idiot, right? And they talk down to your support people. They talk down to you, you know, whether you're the founder, the salesperson. It's just this very demeaning tone. It's like they expect everyone to bend at their will. Like they're doing you a big favor for being their customer.
I think there's a few different pieces to this part of it. And most of the time you can identify this type of thing in the language that they use or how they reference the types of problems that they're running into and whether they say, oh, this is a massive problem in your app or why doesn't this work? Like they get very angry and frustrated very, very quickly and things just escalate fast to the point that like they see even just like little minute problems or UI glitches and things like that as a massive problem that calls into question everything that's underneath the covers. And most of the time, that's just not the case. There might be a color that's off or something's mislabeled or the documentation isn't quite up to date. And they'll just blow things out of proportion. And what you'll find is that the language or the tone that they take with either the support emails that they send in or the calls that they make or even just the way that they get in touch with you. Like if they send you an email and then 5 minutes later send you another one, that's a classic sign of a toxic customer. I mean, it's the way that they communicate to you is heavily indicative of like how they're going to be to work with long term.
Yeah, I have that as a warning sign number four in this article. And this was an actual like sequence of emails that I got from someone, again, with .NET Invoice years ago. But warning sign number four is unrealistic expectations. And I got an email into support. It says, is your software localized for Australia? And then literally 10 minutes later, I wanted to make sure you received my previous email. Is your software localized? And then 30 minutes after that, hello, is anyone there? I haven't heard back. And it's like, it's been 40 minutes since you emailed. Like, you know, this is insane. And then 20 minutes later, it was like an all caps thing of like, why aren't you answering? Da, 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 da. And it's like, huh, I have a feeling maybe I shouldn't answer this one. You know, like if I answer the question and they spend the $300, like how much more of a pain are they going to be later on when, you know, they need anything, right? It's this unrealistic expectation, expecting everything to be answered or done yesterday.
I wonder if there's a way, like Brennan Dunn, as you know, is working on rightmessage.io. I wonder if you could somehow flag them and just jack up the price by like 10x to account for that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, I think you make a good point about little things. You know, you'll have thousands of customers using an app and no one complains about, you know, a bunch of stuff. And then one person will just have this such an issue and like, this is a major issue. Like you're saying, you know, it's like all caps subject lines and everything's a bug instead of a feature request, right? It's like, no, that's actually the way you think it should work, but everyone else is fine with the way it works, you know, or it's like this fixed rigid mindset, right? Of like, you should do it this way because that's the only way to do it, you know, or that's the way my old system did it, right? And so it's a bug since you don't match the way my old system did it. But it's like, huh, that is a point of view, but it's not necessarily, you know, your point of view isn't necessarily the right one. But again, coming back to toxic customer tends to think that way. These are the kind of the language they use early on and maybe the expectations that they have. Another thing that I've seen, and it was funny because I used to man support with .NET Invoice, right? And so I would answer a response and then I would get like this threat to escalate, right? Well, can I talk to your support supervisor? Can I talk to the founder? Can I talk to the CEO? Or I demand to talk to the CEO was another one. And it's like, huh, that happens to be me. How can I help you? You know, that would be my response. But it was always like, really? We're gonna do this because there's one misspelling or there's whatever it is. Like you said, the button color doesn't agree with, you know, with how you want it to be. So the threaten to escalate, again, not always. And each of these on its own isn't the end of the world, but it's when you start seeing multiple of these go on over the course of a few interactions that your red flag should be going off.
I think the other interesting thing about these is that sometimes it is just one thing that you can see and say, this person is going to be a toxic customer. And then there's other times where it needs to aggregate. You need to have several different data points. I mean, if your first interaction is, why doesn't this work? And it's all in caps. So it's kind of a giant red flag. But then there's other more subtle things that you get into and they add up over time. And sometimes you don't see them until much further down the road. And that's, you know, as you said earlier, that's when things become a problem. Because then they're probably already in your app or already using it or have already paid for it. And it becomes much more difficult to kind of cut them off as a toxic customer.
Another potential sign of a toxic customer is that they provide way too much feedback. That like every interaction with them is just a stream of consciousness of how they feel things should be different. How this word, you know, we've had people tell us like, well, this word doesn't make sense. You should rename that everywhere in your app to be this other thing. It should just say emails up there instead of broadcast or something like that. And it's like, huh, okay, thanks for the feedback. We have 4 years of history of this being broadcast everywhere, and that's what all our documentation says, and that's what all the marketing says, and that's what all the code, you know, it's like everything calls it a broadcast just because right now you don't understand that yet. In a week, you will know what that means, and changing it to emails is actually more confusing. So, you know, I guess what I'm saying is like, it's fine to get feature requests, and it's fine to get some feedback from someone, but if every phone call you're walking away with 10 different things that someone is asking for, there's a potential there that that person may take their opinion a little, I don't know, too seriously is not the right word, but it's like they value it over your own or over the opinion of your company or your product.
You know, the specific example that you just brought up about like the name of a particular field or a drop-down menu or just something that is presumably really just a label in the app kind of brings up an interesting sideline about the fact that like some people will go and say, well, what can I implement and put in as a technical solution to this thing that keeps coming up where people want to use different terminology? And the thing that I've seen a lot of apps do is allow you to rename things throughout the app so that instead of calling in something emails, for example, they'll call it broadcast. And if a customer comes in and says, hey, this should be called X, you can go in and you could presumably change that inside of their user account that would just propagate it throughout the entire app. But then it makes it more confusing. It's a little bit harder to support because all your documentation is probably not going to line up directly with that. So I think that you have to be a little bit careful about whether or not you put technical solutions in place for problems that are actually warning signs of problematic customers.
Totally. It's like if everyone requests that, then that might make sense. But that's a heck of a lot of work to do for one customer. You know, if literally you have thousands of customers, no one's ever complained about a naming thing, and one customer gives you 10 things and a bunch of them are naming things, it's like, really, are you going to change that? Like everyone has an opinion and you have to, you know, you're building for the masses, and a single customer coming in doesn't understand the context and they don't understand that you do have thousands of other customers. I think that's another kind of mindset thing with the hard customers that you deal with, is they don't have any context for the thousands or tens of thousands of other people who are already using it. And I think that comes back to that kind of fixed mindset thing I talked about earlier, that there's only one way to do it, and it's the way that I think it should be done. Another thing that I've seen is like someone raising the same issues over and over. I mean, I guess it comes back to that email that I kept getting about the Australian dollar, you know, but they'll just kind of email back with the same issue like every day or every week. Even if you say like, we're working on it, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like they feel this somehow, this anxiety or this sense of urgency, and they need to like, I don't know, continue to force it on you. That goes along. I've also seen like multiple contacts with the same issue through multiple channels. So they email you, they call you on the phone, and they chat, and you're like, you're actually making this harder on everyone, because that mixes things up, right? Like, please don't submit the same quest. There's something about urgency and like expectations, right? It's expectation of turnaround. If you were a consulting firm, then maybe you know, they're paying you 50 or 100 grand and you have someone dedicated to them. If you're a SaaS app and you have 10, 20,000 customers, like even big customers, they likely will not be getting that level of, you know, of turnaround time on their feature requests. You know, again, if they were a consulting firm, then yes, they're going to build what you say. If you're a SaaS app, you're not necessarily going to build everything everyone suggests. And, you know, some folks have a hard time understanding that. And those tend to be the ones with the misaligned expectations that turn into toxic customers.
The other thing that sometimes you'll see is that they will, after a very short time period with your app, they will have, you know, several pages of quote-unquote suggestions for you to change. And it's partly just a lack of education on their part because they haven't taken the time to learn how your app works and how it compares to things that they have used or done in the past. But they feel like they know better than you do about how this particular app should be built. And there are certainly exceptions to the rule here, but generally speaking, you probably know the market way better than they do, especially if you've been doing this, running an app for any length of time and it's a profitable app. They're going to come in and they're going to base all of their thoughts and ideas around their previous experiences. And a lot of times you've designed around those because they weren't good experiences, or those other apps that you were competing against weren't doing things in a way that made sense for most of the customers. And really, you're just putting yourself in a position to put in bad features because of their requests. Like, those are the customers that you're trying to avoid.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's a trip to see if you're competing against apps, and some of them will make what you see as poor design choices. And over time, you're like, man, that's pretty hacky. But customers coming from those apps think that is like the quote unquote right way to do it, even though it's not. Like, it tends to be a bad user experience for new customers. But since they've been using something, they expect that to be the way, that's the way things should be named, or that's how it should work. We see this with Infusionsoft, to be honest. There's just a lot of, I will say, questionable UX and design decisions. But if you do it different than them, even in a what I would consider a more modern or a better way to do it that's much more efficient, it can confuse people who are used to thinking in the Infusionsoft mindset. I think the last one for perhaps identifying toxic customers early is that they can expect a lot of special treatment. They'll ask for extra services to get thrown in. They'll ask for almost always like a big price break. So, you know, why, like they're doing you a favor for being their customer. They get a price break that no one else asked for, kind of without giving a reason. There's just a lot of special favors that they can call in. And this is something, you know, again, if this is the only thing a customer does early on, all right, that's fine. But if it's coupled with these other things, it's something to really be aware of and watch out for.
A big one here for like a SaaS app would be phone support or direct access to the founder, which is justifiable, especially in the early days when you're the only one who is running everything, or maybe you have somebody who's doing some part-time support. But it becomes a problem over time that can get bigger if you leave it unchecked. Like, you have to kind of cut those things off early if you can possibly help it. But the people who have that expectation going in, that's where you start running into the problems.
So now we're gonna switch gears a little bit and talk about potentially how to handle this, whether you detect it early or whether you get down the road a bit, some strategies for what to do, you know, as this type of thing unfolds. I think I'll start by saying that hard customers, toxic customers, they will by nature just absorb and suck away an enormous amount of your time. There's someone out there who calls them like time vampires. And I've seen folks that will literally just demand like dozens of hours a week of your time based on the number of requests and the number of the handholding and the phone calls and all this stuff. And it can really be chaotic, especially if you're running SaaS. Now, if you're selling downloadable software, I'll tell you something we had to do with .NET Invoice a few times. It wasn't often, but it was maybe once a year. We would refund them, tell them to keep the software. We refunded them and we would basically run away. And we told them, look, we cannot, for $300 one time, we cannot provide this level of support, and then kind of let them be on their own. But with SaaS, it's harder, right? Because if they're already using your platform and you didn't kind of turn them away in advance, you have to force someone to leave, to migrate away, which is a bit harder to do. We've only done it a very, very few times in the life of Drip, and it really sucks. Drip and Hittail, to be honest. Like I was saying earlier, it's close to, but it's not nearly as bad as like hiring the wrong person, but it can be a real drag, which is why you'll want to kind of learn to identify these folks in advance, right? And to kind of see the signs early on in the sales conversation and try to cut bait early, because you have to ask yourself, like, is this going to be worth it in the long run? You know, trust your gut in terms of, if you see a bunch of these signs, it's easy to talk yourself into, well, we can work with it, you know, or we can manage expectations or whatever. And it's like, it's likely going to get more complicated than that.
And I think there's an important distinction to be made here between the customers who are taking up a lot of your time because they have legitimate issues versus the ones who are being difficult. And like, I'm in a situation now where there are certain issues that are taking up a ton of my time. And there are some customers who are coming to me and saying, hey, can you do this or can you do that? And they're, I don't want to say constantly, but like, I'm getting fairly regular emails from them. And, you know, if you go through this list, you can say, oh, well, these people are problematic customers. And at the stage that I'm at, that's actually not the case. It's the opposite. I'm actually appreciative that I'm getting this feedback and these people are saying, hey, could you do this or could you do that? Because it gives me ideas. And yes, I'm spending a lot of time on it, but it's also pointing me in the right direction. So I need that right now. If I were, you know, like 100x where I'm at right now, that might be different, but I'm not. So like, there's a very big distinction between where your business is at in terms of how much time you're probably going to be spending with customers and whether or not they're a problematic customer. Like, I don't have any of those right now, but you could certainly potentially mistakenly view some of those customers as, oh, these are problematic, when the reality is like your app is just not quite there yet and it still needs more work and there's still a lot of effort that you need to put into it on the front end in order to be able to cut those issues off on the back end.
Totally. I'm glad you called that out, because especially in the early days, getting a lot of feature request feedback input, especially when there's a tone element to it, right? If it's not demanding, if it's like, hey, have you thought about this? Or, hey, this would really help me out. Or this would be a great feature to build. I mean, you'll get emails that it's like, how have you not built this yet? I am shocked and appalled at the catastrophic way that your app does not do X, Y, Z yet, you know? And it's like, it's being shocked that it doesn't versus suggesting it as an improvement and realizing that software, especially SaaS, is an ever-evolving thing, that everything is not perfect all of the time, going to work exactly the way everyone wants 100% of the time. So there's a difference in tone. I agree with you. You know, we've had a ton of people who give us a lot of really good feature suggestions. You know, you look at Brennan Dunn. He does it publicly. He does it via email. He gives us a ton of features, requests, suggestions, ideas, and they're damn good. These are things that really have leveled up Drip over the course of years. But he's never been on that other side where he's like, I can't believe Drip doesn't do this. I never heard that out of his mouth. So it's just this difference in like attitude and tone.
Like a telltale sign that they're trying to be helpful is that like if they apologize for sending feedback over. And like I've gotten that from several people where like, oh, I'm sorry to keep bothering you with this stuff, but it'd be great if you could do this or, you know, can this be done? If they're apologetic about writing into you for email support or anything like that, that totally puts them in a different category. They're certainly not a problematic or toxic customer at that point. They're the opposite. But as Rob just said, like it's the tone of voice. You can tell from that whether or not that's the case.
And the thing to remember here, if you do have a really hard customer who's demanding, is you have to keep your cool. Like you have to be kind. You need to be honest with them and you need to be firm. The more you give in to kind of irrational demands. Now, if they're rational feature requests and they're actually things that make sense, and you say, look, we are going to build that. That's a great idea. Let's do it. And the person backs off, then you're cool, right? You've fixed the thing. If they continue to still email every day or every week, like, why isn't this done? Why isn't this done? Why isn't it? Then you know that you maybe are tipping in that other direction of it being hard. And that's where if it's rational stuff and you're building it, then keep going. If it's not rational stuff, you know, if it's stuff that just you know is incorrect, bad for the product, bad for your other customers, you've already tried it, doesn't work for whatever reason, that's where you do have to be firm and you have to separate your emotions from the conversation. And if you can't do it, you need to have someone like a support person or a customer success person who can do that. Someone who is exceptionally good at this is Anna on my team. She would handle angry customers. She would handle toxic customers. And those two are different, right? Angry customers.
Well, she's talked to me a bunch of times. What do you
say? Yeah. Oh, boom, boom, boom. Nice. Well done, Mike. But, you know, you'll have angry customers who are just angry about one thing, right? They get frustrated. And that's, you can smooth that over. And then toxic is when they're like angry all the time is kind of, a way I would put it. But Anna was really good at it. And if you remember, I interviewed her, gosh, it may have been on Zen Founder, actually. And it was like maybe 6 to 12 months ago. But we talked about like dealing with negative emotions and how she was able to separate herself from the emotions coming from customers who are frustrated. And like I said, this is by far the hardest thing to do, especially if someone is making like sweeping insults about you, your team, your intelligence, your application. But this is where you have to be kind, be honest, and be firm and not lose your cool. And this is going to be the hardest thing to remember and not let it derail you. Like once you know that a customer is being particularly difficult, don't let it derail your day or your week or your month because it's so easy to do that. And, you know, in the best case scenario, someone who is difficult up front winds up not actually being a toxic customer. Maybe they were just frustrated and they had several issues that you're able to work with them, you're able to fix them, and then they're able to move on. Because there's often this on-ramping period where, you know, let's say the first 30 days of using a new app, you're confused by a lot of things. And most of us go with it, we figure out how to use it, we don't ask the app to change everything, right? But some people are of that more fixed mindset. But if you handle a few of their issues and they like everything else, then it's like you can move on and they really won't be long-term, won't be that toxic customer. I guess what I'm saying is often issues are clustered when someone first starts using your software. And after that, they'll calm down and people can understand how it works. That is the best case. I would say it's not the norm, but in the best case, if you do handle them with kindness and honesty and firmness, you know, that again, that's the best case of coming out of this.
Something else to keep in mind with this is that, you know, dealing with customers is a learned skill, and you might not be very good at it at first, but you will get better at it over time. And in addition to that, there's some people who just have a knack for this. Like you said that Anna seems to have a knack for it, and she's capable of, you know, separating herself from the problems and from the app itself and kind of empathize with the customer. And some people are better at that than others. Even if you train yourself and go through a lot of doing this type of support and dealing with a lot of these types of people, it doesn't mean that you're going to be better than the next person at it or worse than them. Some people just have a knack for it and some people don't. But that said, if you don't have a knack for it, you can get better at it. You can learn to separate yourself. It just takes time and practice.
And I think to kind of wrap things up, you know, I talked about the best case, which is working with them early on and then being able to transition them into like a productive, you know, happy customer. The worst case, of course, is that you find yourself and your team just living through ongoing stress for weeks on end. And there's a couple things, a couple ways to approach this. Firing a customer is not unheard of, you know, especially with larger SaaS apps. It depends on how you want to handle this. Sometimes I've seen folks just plain ignore and just say, look, we're only going to respond to this. Even if this customer sends 10 emails a day, we're going to respond once a day or once every 2 days to all of them. That is one way to handle it. Or you can fire them. If they start being abusive to you or your staff, like that's not cool. You have to protect, I've talked about this before, like you have to protect your people and your loyalty to your people, in my opinion, is going to go so much further than loyalty to, you know, one demanding customer. And this is a hard decision because it's not always black and white. And you have to find out from your team, like how, you know, you can have a toxic customer that's not like abusive. And so you can ask your support team, like, are they abusive? No, they're just a little demanding. And it's like, okay, then maybe it's not time to fire them. But if people are really shaken up and you feel like, you know, things are kind of rattling around, it's like you have to evaluate at what point you let this single person have so much control over your team. And so again, this is a hard decision. It's always going to result in people being pissed off. But if you find that you're at that point, and you feel like you've done everything you can, you know, over the long run, frankly, firing someone who you think could kind of cause this level of headache for you for months or years on end, it's the right decision. Again, it's like making a bad hire. It's not as bad as making a bad hire, but once you've made a bad hire and you know you need to fire someone, it's a hard decision, right? But over the long run, you always think to yourself, why didn't I do that sooner?
You know, I was thinking about this and trying to figure out whether or not there's a specific turning point or a hard benchmark that you can look at to determine whether or not you should just kind of turn the tables and cut a customer loose. Because early on, like, you really don't have any history with the person. So you're not entirely sure whether or not they're going to stick around to begin with, but you probably have like an idea of what your lifetime value is for that customer. So if you're looking at that and then trying to track it back to like how much time and effort you're spending with the support, that's not the whole picture. The whole picture is actually the impact to the rest of your day. And I think that that's not something that any of us would really be measuring. I mean, you might only take 15 or 20 minutes to answer a support request, but if you spend like the next couple of hours like with that stuff churning in the back of your brain and it's distracting you from doing other things, the time for that to cost you, it wasn't 15 minutes, it was 2 hours. So these things can be exponentially more damaging than you initially realize. And, you know, in some cases, you have to be able to identify those people as early as possible, just because you don't want it to get to that point where it is costing you 5x or 10x or 50x what it is that they're paying you or would even potentially pay you for the if they were to stick around for 10, 20, 30 months.
And so to circle back, like we've talked about some signs to look out for, and we've talked about what to do. And hopefully you've heard that like the best case is that you can actually work with someone and help turn them around. And that's, I guess that would be, you know, hopefully something you can shoot for if you do find yourself amidst, you know, a quote unquote toxic customer.
So with that, we're going to wrap up for today. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupstherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt for We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupstherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.